You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, dog fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here in the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, DJ Preach doing his thing, and my main man, OJ McDuffie. Juice, how you feeling today, man?
What's up, Big Seth?
Everything is great. You know, yeah. I've missed being here, doing a little podcasting here. I've enjoyed the vacation. Time down has been good, but, you know, it's good to be back in the tank.
Well, you being the boss, man, you know, you gave us so much time off, man. We all missed this opportunity.
I don't know about being the boss.
Yeah,
man.
Priest will tell you, right, Priest? He's the boss of this whole thing. You know, he gave us some time off, and but it's time to get back at it, man, and a great way to get this thing kicked off. You know, you know me, wide receivers and quarterbacks, man. That's the best two people on any football field, so let's get it going.
Yeah, I know you love having your receivers in here, and if there are quarterbacks, I know you like to be on their good side, right? You like to be that first look, for sure. So, you know, we got to jump right into it, and what a great way, as you said, to kick this season off. Damon Heward dives into the tank, and before we get started, Damon, I want to welcome you the right way. But my first day working for the Miami Dolphins, somebody had to ask Dan Marino for something. And Danny said, everybody wants something, but nobody brings gifts. And so if somebody brings a gift, Damon Heward, not only is coming on the show, but he sent us some passing time wine, Juice.
Yes, sir.
I mean, come on. How about that?
Yes, sir. I can't wait to crack this bad boy open, maybe.
You know, it's a little early my time. There are days I enjoy some Wheaties and wine, but I just couldn't do it today. I wanted to be myself. With you guys on the show, but of course, yeah, send a little passing time your way, but yeah, super excited to be on here with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and passing time, man, speaking of that, Big Seth, you know, you're in business with a good friend of ours as well, Mr. Marino, right?
Yeah, you know, one of the beautiful things that you know, living 3,000 miles away, it's obviously hard to stay in touch with everybody, but this little business project with passing time has been an awesome way for Danny and I to stay connected and build a brand. And what really started as something we're going to have some fun with, making 300 or 400 cases, has turned into over 2,000 cases and absolutely kicking ass as a business. So we're having a bunch of fun building the brand, just passing time.
Right. Could you find a better name, Juice? I mean, my God, man. Passing Time might be the greatest name I've ever heard.
You know,
was it you or Danny? Who came up with it? You or Danny? Come on.
Believe it or not, it was Claire Marino.
Well, that makes sense.
It makes more sense.
Now, I do believe it.
It makes more sense.
You know, it's funny. They have an awesome place up at Kiowa Island, South Carolina. And there's this little road they drive to. And then on the side of their house, it says Passing Time. And, you know, when Dan and I were going to start this thing, we spent a lot of time trying to come up with a name. We actually hired a firm and wasted a whole bunch of stupid money trying to come up with all these names. We had like Daniel Damon, Deep Post. You know, we had all this stuff. But at the end of the day, it was just like we had this guy kind of draw up the label for Passing Time. And we're like, okay, that's it.
Good that's job. It.
That's it. Fantastic. Make it. Keep it simple, right?
That's it, right?
Oh, let's go. And how do you feel having Marino as your backup now?
Exactly.
Your backup.
That all the time, you know? You know what's funny? Yes. I mean, the winery is actually here in Washington State, obviously, but he takes a much bigger role in it than you would think. I mean, he loves wine, obviously, as you know. You guys have been to the Casa and seen his cellar and all that fun stuff. But, you know, he's like, Damon, I don't like this label. We need to add some gold to it. This is our gold label. We need to put some red around the label on Red Mountain. Dude, you're right. And just his business intuition. He's a people person, as you guys know. And he's so good at sales and communication and connecting with people. It's been awesome. And I think he would tell you the same thing.
He probably does pretty well with the quality control, too, I would imagine.
He would tell you his favorite part of it is enjoying the wine.
Good stuff. Well, hey, I know, Juice, we're going to get into it real quick with Damon, but as I'm sitting here, and I haven't seen Damon in a long time, I think the last time I actually got to spend some real time with Damon, it was your first year with the Patriots, and you and Larry came down the whole team came down for their first game here in Miami, and I picked you guys up in my little Nissan or something, and we went over to Moderato's and met up with Danny. Remember that? That was the first time.
I remember that.
It's been a long time since I've seen Damon, but I'm looking at him now, Juice, and I feel like he's got a little Tom Garfinkel going on, right?
He looks spot on Tom right there.
Yeah, he could be the Tom standard.
For sure.
Well, I swear to God, this is the first college shirt I put on in 6 months in Seattle. We really don't dress here, and actually we've all been living in our houses for a year now. But I figured Miami, South Beach, I better put on the collar and look good for you guys. I had no
idea. Looking good, Damon. Looking good.
That's it. All right, like we saw, like you talked about, man, before we get into some of the great times we had here in Miami and, of course, some of the places you played following your Dolphins career, let's talk a little bit about life in Washington State. You're saying a little bit about it. Now, your dad, also your high school head football coach, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he must know a little something about being quarterback position, because I know you and your brother Brock, you know, both got into the league and played for a while, and your brother Luke played at North Carolina. What was Pops like? What was he teaching you guys out there, man? I mean, how to sling you guys throwing it in the backyard, the weather and everything. I mean, what was going on in that backyard at Hubert House?
Juice, I get this question all the time, and it's so funny. You know, I grew up in an era, same as you, where there wasn't this specialization, but it's so funny. Now, guys our age, they have kids, and they're like, hey, Damon, you know, at what age did your dad get you a quarterback trainer? Did he work with you in the backyard? What age did he hang up the tire? Did you do all that stuff? My dad looks at them all sideways and he goes, you know what I did in the early 70s? I married a 6-foot Dutch lady when no one else was
there. Good.
That's
genius.
How I got my boys to the league.
That's right. Smart. Brilliant.
I mean, yeah, seriously. We played all the sports. I played nine games a year of high school football, maybe 10, 11. We got to the playoffs. Then it was basketball. And then it was baseball. You know, we just played them all. But today it is so different. But I say all that. We were around the game, right? Dad was the coach. We were the ball boy. We would go to practice with Dad. You know, Friday night under the lights in our little hometown was everything to us. It's all we knew. Our house was 2 blocks from the stadium. You know, it was 3 boys in a 1,500 square foot house with 1 bathroom and high school football. And that was everything to us. But I didn't have the QB guru trainer at 8 years old.
Well, look, it must run in the family, Juice, because now your son, right? Congratulations. But your son's heading, following in your footsteps, no?
Yep. Sam's going to be going to the University of Washington. It's pretty awesome stuff.
Nice.
You know, he's just kind of the same thing. Been around the game, growing up around it, you know, loves ball. You know, who knows? I mean, all these ratings and stars and all that crap. But I'll say this. He's a good kid and he loves ball. He works hard. So we'll see where it goes.
Very good.
That's amazing, man. Because I've noticed a lot of guys that their kids aren't playing football. And I love the fact that you've got your kid in football. My kids play baseball. I couldn't get them to stay in football for anything, bro. And it's upsetting, but at the same time, though, they're in a team sport. But it's awesome that your son is, you know, following that in that family tradition and playing football. He's a quarterback as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's a quarterback. It's unbelievable. I got to say this. He plays for this amazing high school football coach who actually was a college coach who actually comes from the Hal Mummy tree of the air raid. And Juice, if we'd have had some of this air raid stuff when we were in high school and college, like it would less is more. Like it's so simple, but it's so brilliant.
Yeah.
And like, it's like, instead of Juice, you got to be 15 yards inside edge of the numbers. And then when you hit your third step, the ball has to come out. This is like they do so much backyard stuff. It's like run to green grass. Buy some time, get him the rock.
That's
and
awesome.
He's so good at it. And that it's so awesome, man. So he's been around an amazing coach. And you know, he's started for 4 years in high school and just has a good little feel for the position because it's 10,000 hours, man. It's throw and catch. It ain't a rugby scrum under center, handing off, you know, to one guy who's faster than everybody else. It's slinging around to all the guys on your team. It's a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Congrats, man, and good luck, and enjoy that, right? I mean, I've seen, as you said, all these guys. I think my son's going to make a hell of a PR guy. I do.
Yeah.
I don't know if quarterback is in his future, but
if he gets good looks.
He's going to be an engineer. He's going to build something special, man.
I can't wait. I appreciate that. He is a creator. So, look, Juice alluded to these great times in Miami, and I think you're referring to with the Dolphins.
Correct.
But what people may not know or remember is that Damon did have a great moment in one of his early visits to Miami, but that came in college. So I don't know if you know this, Juice, but the Miami Hurricanes have this prized 58-game home winning streak at the Orange Bowl. I mean, it's epic. But it fell at the hands of Damon Huard. Right? So, I mean, yeah. Let's talk about that.
I did know that. And shellacking as well.
Shellacking. I love that word.
You know, that was a fun day. I swear to God, I had never been east of the Rocky Mountains at that age in my life. And I'd never been exposed to humidity. And when I tell you, go back and watch that game, I didn't throw one spiral. I mean, the ball's coming out like an Orlando Mare kick, right? It's brutal. But we had a really good team. We were, you know, we were down a couple touchdowns at halftime. But in the second half, it was just one of those days where, like, the ball bounced our way every which way. You know, we had a kick return. You know, they fumbled a kick return. We go in and score. We have a pick six for a touchdown. I throw a screen pass. It goes 80 for a touchdown. We scored three touchdowns, like, in the first 2 minutes of the third quarter, just, like, out of nowhere. And then we kind of just warmed down. But the greatest thing about that is that team had dudes. Ray Lewis, Warren Sapp, The Rock. So, you know, I don't run into those guys very often, but I can't wait till one day I do.
Yeah, I bet.
Because that one stings them a little bit. They hadn't lost at home in 10 years. Like,
right. You go a decade without losing at home. I mean, they just didn't lose the Orange Bowl, and then Damon shuts them down. How about that?
I threw a screen pass and went 80 yards for a touchdown.
Hey, man. Part of it.
Yeah, baby.
It was a great. We didn't need an airplane to fly back home to Seattle after that one. That was cool. That was really cool.
So, Damon, you come back to Miami in 97, but this time as a Dolphin. You know, what was it like as a young quarterback, you know, fighting to make the roster, you know, being in that same quarterback room, Reno, we talked a little bit about, and how did you and Danny get so close, you know, in that situation?
Yeah, well, you know, so 96, I got cut from the Bengals, was out of football. I got a phone call from the Dolphins that spring of 97. And, you know, I actually had a pretty cool little job in Seattle. I was working for Paul Allen.
Little job in Seattle.
I
know, right? He was trying to figure out whether or not he was going to buy the Seahawks. And there was this kind of window he did out of purchase option. And anyway, I got on with his little crew and was kind of doing some PR stuff for his Football Northwest group to see if he was going to buy the Seahawks. Anyway, I get a call from the Dolphins that spring. And I'm like, man, should I, you know, am I just a camp arm? Should I give this one more shot? And they're like, have you been working out? And I'm like, oh, yeah, every day. I hadn't done shit in like 6 months.
But, good answer, though. It was the right answer.
Damn right.
It was pissing rain. It was like April. I looked at my newly married wife, Julie. I'm like, what do you think? Should I give this football thing one more try, the Dolphins? She said, Miami? Hell yeah. Miami, I'm coming too. So anyway, we made the venture down there. And I was competing against a kid from Duke. Anyway, he was on the practice squad the year before. And so, oh, I knew they didn't draft a quarterback in the draft. Mm-hmm. So they brought me down. I did have a little workout with the Dolphins in August of 96. I think someone retired and they wanted to look at us throw this, that, and the other. So they knew me a little bit. They thought I must have had a good little workout. Bring me back 8 months later. And, you know, the beautiful thing about it was Jimmy, as you guys know, he didn't care what round you were drafted in, how big you were, how fast you were. You either got the job done or you didn't. And, you know, he gave me an equal opportunity to compete. And, you know, I played better than this guy, even though he was their draft pick. Hell, he cut a second round draft pick in 97, Brad Jackson from Cincinnati.
Yeah, he caught a few of them. Nope. The year before, he caught a couple defensive backs that were second and third round picks.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's like he didn't care. Like, I'm going to keep the best football players. And I'm so grateful for that opportunity that he gave me a legitimate shot to compete, to earn that job. And, so I made the roster that first year. And the funny thing was, I was on the practice squad week one. And then John Kidd, who was a third string quarterback, like, hurt his hamstring. And they elevated me up to the 53-man roster.
On that Harley, probably.
John Kidd would remind me, oh, yeah, you can thank me for that one. So, yes, thank you, John. So to answer your second question, getting close to Danny, you know, I think in all honesty, I wasn't a threat. You know, I wasn't a first-round draft pick. I wasn't the future of the Dolphins. I was just a young, hungry kid who loved ball, worked hard. And obviously, you know, I had Dan Marino posters on my wall as a kid, so – yep. For me, it was really super cool to be in these same meeting rooms with, you know, one of the top five greatest quarterbacks of all time and learn from him. And there couldn't have been a better place for me to go with Jimmy Johnson, who was an equal opportunity guy, and then to play alongside Dan Marino and to learn how to be a pro. It was awesome.
Well, I'll tell you what, Damon, I talked to Danny a little bit, you know, before we had this interview, and he said you did a lot in terms of getting him ready for games, too. You know, he said you were like the ideal guy to have for prep. You know, your preparation was unbelievable. You had him, you know, ready to go and quiz him on a lot of situations and stuff like that. So he gives you a lot of props for, you know, having him ready to go on game day, you know, and so don't just think that, you know, you're just that guy in the room with him, man. It meant a lot to him what you brought to the table for him to be ready to play out there every single Sunday, Monday, wherever we're playing, man. So, you know, don't sell yourself short on just being a guy in the room with him, man. It meant a lot how close you got to him in preparation and the friendship, obviously, and now business partners.
Yeah. I mean, he was the big brother I never had, in all honesty. You know, being, I think he's like 13 years older than me.
Do you remind him of that often?
Well, you know, at one point, you know, I told him, I said, I'm closer in age to your oldest son, Dano. You, but, you know,
I bet he loved that.
You can't drink wine yet. This is, you know, but, so I'll hang with you. Anyway, but funny. Anyway, no, man, we had a bunch of fun. And there's no doubt, preparation, watching film. Yeah. You know, the other great quarterback in that room who was just awesome at film study was Craig Erickson those first few years, 97, 98, 99. You know, so yeah, we did. We had a cool little nucleus and we all got along. There wasn't, you know, Dan was obviously the man, and we were there to support him and help him and help the Dolphins win football games in any shape or form. So yeah, I did. I took a lot of pride in preparation and knowing that I was just a snap or two away from being in there, and, you know, certainly wanted to help him out and help the Dolphins win football games. That was my job.
And we'll find out about that snap or two away in a minute here, Juice. But I want to go back to this helping Danny get ready in this preparation, because one of the things I will never forget is this routine that you and Lindo had in prepping the footballs before they changed all those rules back there. But I saw things done to footballs that I didn't know were possible with dryers and cold tubs and hot tubs and all that. Talk a little bit about, you know, what you went through there.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a great conversation, kind of long-winded, and if I bore you, just shut me up.
You can't bore me.
And to this day, it like still goes on like with footballs. And it's amazing how far we've come from back then. And I have all kinds of crazy stories I could tell you, not just about me and Lindo, but throughout my journey in the ball. Obviously, we've heard it all, right? From the flake gate to
sure. I mean,
and now you look at these balls, and I've talked to Brady about it. Like, Wilson actually does the work on the balls before they even send it to him. Wow. And they look, they're unbelievable. I mean, the football is a big deal. And back when Juice and I were playing in the late 90s, when you went on the road, you didn't get to bring your own footballs that you got to doctor up. They just assumed, oh, Wilson, it's the same football. Everyone, dude, and I've been places where that home team, they take that ball right out of the bag and give it to those ball boys on that sideline. And we'll get, you know, I mean, like, so the ball's a big deal. But in
slick 06, as shit.
06, I mean, I remember going to Oakland trying to throw some footballs that came right out of a bag. There's no way anybody can throw this thing. Okay, but anyway, all that being said, in 06, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning went to the NFL, or it was around that time, maybe a little bit earlier, 05, and say, hey, look, you know, in college football, when you go on the road, you get to bring your own footballs. And if they weigh 13 pounds PSI, let us play with them. And they're like, okay, you're right. So everybody got to put their own little brand, Dolphins, on the Wilson the Duke, and that was their football. They could doctor them up. They could bring them along. But remember, the kicking ball had to stay the same. We can't K-ball. Doctor
yeah, the Lindo didn't like that K-ball either.
The K-ball.
It's all about
the K-ball. It's brutal. So, but I do remember in Miami, yes, Danny actually wasn't too picky. I mean, the dude was so good, he could throw any freaking ball, right? But, like, kickers, punters, me, my hands aren't the biggest. 8.5, I think, or something. But like it was important to me to get the right feeling ball, because every ball is a little bit different, that leather, that texture. But yes, whether it was the dryer, whether it was shaving cream, now it's mud. And this mud that's out there is so good. Like, I want to go back and play with this mud on these footballs, man. Juice, you never dropped anything anyway. But they're just, they're like that old baseball glove when you were a kid. Right? Yeah. It just fit to your hand. You're like, man, I ain't ever going to miss a grounder with this thing. These balls are like that now. They weren't back in the day. But yes, there was a punter. I want to say it was in 98 or 99. Klaus Wilmsma.
Klaus.
This dude, and we would fight. This dude wanted basketball. He wanted, obviously, he wanted to punt a basketball. He would pump this thing up to like 17 PSI.
Kickball.
He's running around, making sure this thing's getting in the game somehow, some way when he's punting. And I think I went one time and showed him to Danny. I'm like, can you throw this thing? I said, I could shoot it, but I don't think I could throw it. And he's like, what the? No. So anyway, yes, we had some battles with how much time in the dryer. Do we put the shaving cream? And the Dolphin equipment room was the best. I mean, those guys, they took care of us. I only had been in Cincinnati, and I mean, God, I got used socks and a jock, and coming to Miami was a whole new world. So that was freaking awesome.
Tony made you sign them out, though. Anything you needed, you had to sign it out and had to enter it into the computer. You know, we've had Tony in the tank. We know how we ran that shit.
Exactly. But yeah,
the Klaus, ball, did somebody say, "Hey, Klaus, it ain't about you, brother." Like, did anyone?
Right.
Miami.
I mean, you know, if you ain't cheating, Brian, I get it a little bit, but like, you know, there's just no way that we can't throw this thing, bro. So yeah, the balls are a fascinating subject, but they got them dialed in now. They really do.
They look awfully dark now, Damon.
Like, that's what I was like. Brady's ball is almost black when he I'm like, that old school dude is still doing it to the football, whatever it is.
Things are almost juice, like, it's this baseball mud. Yeah. And it doesn't change the weight. It feels like a brand new, light, beautiful football. Like I said, it's like your old glove in Little League, man. It's beautiful. And it's not just – you look at a lot of the guy, they're dark. The Seahawks got it dialed in with this bud. So it's a beautiful thing. I'm curious what the Dolphins do, what the Q's like down there. But you can get them right now, which is the right thing. We all want them to be able to sling it, catch it.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, that's right. You know, talking more about your days down here in Miami, man. You know, obviously, we love a few things down here. And a couple of them are the weather, obviously, like the wife, your wife loved, and the water. But I understand that you, Lindo, and water was kind of a dangerous combination, man, especially when Rob Conrad got involved, too.
Oh, shit.
We've talked a lot about, you know, Rob's crazy situation when he fell off his boat. But Lindo mentioned that the three of you guys were lost at sea at some point as well. I mean, is that true?
That's a true story. We were down off of Key West, and you know, Rob's a kid who grew up in Boston and fisherman and knew how to do it. And obviously his story in 2000, what was that, 15 or 16, man, it's unbelievable. We're so grateful to Rob's and what a freaking stud to swim in the water for 15 hours or something. But it didn't get that tragic that day, but it was scary. There's no doubt. We're out and we're in shallow water in his little boat. And we're fishing for, I think it was permit. And all of a sudden, like, the tide goes out. And, like, our boat's in too shallow water. And we're looking around us. And there's, like, no one. I mean, there's a few little islands with nothing on it. And we're like, oh, shoot. We got to turn the engine off. There's no water here. And we're on a pan.
That's a bad combination.
Nowhere. So we had to wait till, like, the tide came back up. And you know, that was a few hours, and then the engine wouldn't start, and then it kind of got scary. And if I remember right, it was like somehow, some way, we had like to have the Coast Guard, someone come and drag us in. And so they dragged us in, and we get in, you know, close to everybody, and Rob or Lindo's like, "Oh my God, this is the best spot to catch tarpon! Like, fire up the engine!"
Wait, what?
And I'm like,
"You take your ass home."
No. Let's just my engine's working. It's great. Listen, I'm like, okay, well, we can see land and there's some lights. Okay, whatever. So then again, So okay, thank you, Coast Guard, for getting us here. But yeah, we're gonna fish for some tarpon.
Go back out, yeah.
And so yeah, we're.
Lindo said you called Stu. You called everybody, like anybody you could try and read.
I mean, I don't. You know, I wish I could remember the story better, but I do remember that. Like for the second time, the engine went out again, and I think we ended up rolling ourselves back in the second time. So yeah, it was a couple of some stupid guys. You know, fishing, didn't really know what we were doing, and thankful to make it back. But yeah, I don't know if I'm going to go out on a boat with those guys anytime soon.
Except these young guys, man, have been having a rough time at sea, man. We had Zach and Izzo talking about their story out there. We got these guys out there, man. No wonder the brothers don't go out there in the ocean, Big Seth. No wonder we don't go out there, man.
Oh, man.
Just stay on the pier. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to fast forward to the 1999 season. There's a lot of reasons that I think that's a big year for you here in Miami. And there's three things, Damon, that jump out at me. The first of which wasn't really about being on the field. And I'll never forget this, and certainly not something to celebrate. But you were the guy that came into the players' lounge the morning that Cecil Collins got arrested. I remember we all kind of found out about it. Were you guys living in the same apartment complex or something? I remember you coming in and telling everybody. Is my memory serving me correctly here?
Yeah, we were right down the street there. Gosh, I wish I could remember the name of the apartment buildings there. Just to the east of...
It was right there.
facility. Yeah, I mean, it was brand new. It was really nice. Right.
On PTI the or some Palm Trace. Palm Trace Landing.
Yeah.
That's all right. Maybe. I lived in a couple of them the first, So anyway, yes. I just remember kind of that morning, like every news station was at our apartment buildings. I'm kind of getting ready to come in and think, what's going on around here? And it was like, yeah, Cecil Collins just got arrested. So yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah. Well, I just remember it, Juice, because, you know, my guess is at that point, Stu had gotten the call. Jimmy had gotten the call. Harvey probably got the, you know, but I'm just downstairs doing my morning stuff. Hey, can so-and-so call in to Joe Rose? And Damon comes in like he saw a ghost. And he's like, you're not going to believe Cecil's not here, right? And they're like, no. And next thing you know, everyone starts circling around Damon in the players' lounge while we're all getting our free breakfast on. And, right. I don't think Cecil's going to make it in for meetings this morning. And, you know, and then we come to find out what happened. And you know, there's certainly a dark side to that story. But I'll never forget that it was Damon that kind of broke the news downstairs.
Yeah, I didn't have Twitter or nothing.
Right, right.
It was actually out of my mouth.
The way things used to get spread around, right?
I know, right?
Yeah. But let's talk about something more positive that year. And we're working our way into the, you know, where you certainly had this great breakthrough in your career. But Lindo, we talked to, you know, Juice reached out to Danny. We did some research for this one. And Lindo didn't just tell us about getting lost at sea, but he wanted to make sure that we talked to you about holding for him in his Pro Bowl season. So he wanted to make sure that was noted. Now, he said he talked to Danny. He talked to none of those guys were going to do it. He told Juice said, go to hell. I'm not going to hold for you. But that Damon was his guy. And next thing you know, he has 30-plus kicks, and he's in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, not only in the Pro Bowl, I think – if I'm not mistaken, it was an NFL record for most field goals in a season that year.
It was. I had to send his shoe to Canton. I mean,
that's right.
Kind of sent his
shoe to Canton. So I like to think, you know, I was at Canton for just a couple of seconds there.
Sure, man.
So that record was broken. But the other way you can look at it is like, we couldn't score.
We kicked too many field goals right there.
Too many damn field goals. So
you can't put all of that on your shoulders.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, all that being said, yeah, Lindo was a hell of a kicker. And God, you know, yeah, you're right. Who the hell wants to be the holder, right? Like, you're only good if no one knows who the hell the holder is, right? Like, right. So I guess it's good. Maybe you don't remember that I was the holder in 99, but yes, I was. And, you know, Lindo is great because, like, some of these guys, I honestly, our punter got hurt in New England during a stretch. At one point I was there and I had to hold for Adam Vinatieri, who's arguably the greatest kicker in the history of the game. But he was a pain in the ass to hold for. He was like, the ball needs to be there, and you got to tilt it back here. Lindo was awesome. I mean, he was just get that shit down. I'm going to put it through. And he did. And so, yeah, it wasn't hard holding for Lindo.
Damon, I say that all the time. You say that, Damon, man, but I tell Seth all the time, I think the holder is the toughest position when it comes to that set. You know, you think about it, you know, center's got to snap it. Okay, that's one thing. Kicker's got to kick it. That's another thing. But for you, the catch, the set, the tilt, the laces out, all that shit, within that much time, that's why I didn't want to do it, man. I didn't want to fuck it up, bro.
You know what I mean?
You handled like a pro.
Well, you know, I think it is. It's just like taking pride in anything. But yeah, you know, in South Florida, it's not too hard to hold a football coming off the bench. But when you got to go to Buffalo, you ain't been in that weather and the wind's blowing, you know, from certain ways. I don't know which way it blows in Buffalo. But shit, it's a tough job. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and you're right though. When nobody knows who it is, the best that you've done your job.
But you know, it's funny. It's the holder and the long snap. Like the bus will leave for a lot of guys. They might even leave for the quarterback. They ain't leaving for the long snapper and the holder.
No,
I've heard.
They were leaving for our quarterback though. I don't think.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't.
They probably
have left
weren't leaving Danny behind.
No, not leaving Danny. But a lot of teams they'd leave him.
But, yeah, but you know what, man? There's something else that stood out that year, Big Seth. And of course, it was Damon's run as a starting quarterback down here in Miami. And we're up in New England. You know, Danny has to leave the game early, and here comes Damon. And I remember this, man. And, you know, talk about what that was like and what kind of advice did one Trey give you when you took over under center that time, man?
You know what was amazing? And the best advice he gave me that day was because it got off to a bad start. I mean, he threw a pick six, and then my first throw in the game, Kippy called like double out routes. And I don't know if I was throwing to you or someone, but Tony Martin, one of the two. Ty Law steps right in front of it, takes it back to the house. We were down 14-0, like within the first 2 minutes of the game, if you remember. And I just remember coming to the sideline, jogging off the field, like, ah, shit. I had a good little run in the NFL. I got to play with Dan Marino. That was cool. God damn, this is hard. But I come to the sideline, and Dan's like, Damon, I'm just going to tell you, you're not going to believe how long this game is, how many opportunities you're going to get, how many touches you're going to get. This thing ain't ever really over. Just don't like this is a, you're going to get 10, 11, 12 more possessions. Like it's a long game. Just hang in there. And it felt like the longest game ever. But, you know, I get in there and I scramble around on a drive and I find Tony Martin open and score a touchdown. I'm like, okay. And then you kind of settle into the game.
Yeah.
And we're hanging with them. And our defense, as you know, was really good that year. It was going to keep us in the game. So it's just a matter of just making some plays, hanging in this thing, giving ourselves a chance to win it in the fourth quarter. And the best thing that happened over the course of that game is as I kind of settled in was I looked across at that Patriot defense. I'm like, okay, Lawyer Malloy's back there at safety, my college teammate. Oh, there's Willie McGinnis. I think that dude sacked me four times in college at SC. Oh, Teddy Bruschi. Okay. I kicked your ass in college, Teddy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, Chad Eaton on the D-line. Let's see. I played against you in my arch rival high school at Rogers High School in Puyallup. I played against you at the Cougs at Wazoo, and I kicked your ass. And now I get to play against you on Sunday? Oh, that quarterback, Drew Bledsoe, I beat your ass as a sophomore in high school basketball. We're going to do it again today. So as the game kept going on, I'm like, yeah, this is the NFL. You can do this. You belong. And you know what? Hit Stanley Pritchett at the end of the game, the end zone, man. Again, I did not need an airplane to fly home.
Oh, man.
South Florida after that win. It was so awesome. All you guys. And, you know, the other crazy thing, Pete Carroll was the head coach of the Patriots that day. He's here in Seattle now. Whenever I bump into him, he talks about that game. Because you might not
remember. I'm glad it haunts him.
I was sacked 9 times in that game. 9 times. Okay. So they and people go, I was just bringing Will weak safety. You hadn't played. You were a young guy. We just thought we'd bring the house. But I also ran for like 80 yards. And it was like I wasn't a runner, but it was kind of, you know, outhouse or castle. So, you know, they either got me or they didn't. I had room to run or scramble and make some throws. So, you know, the beauty of it is there's all these neat connections. And Drew Bledsoe is one of my best friends to this day. And, you know, I even remember after that game, him giving me a big hug, Damon, saying, yeah, dude, I'm happy for you. This is pretty cool. I had a lot of great moments in the NFL, but that first game and all those storylines and all those guys and all my awesome teammates in Miami and my opportunity to play and to make the most of it, I'll never forget it. It was awesome.
It was so awesome. And you know, Juice and I were just talking about it the other day, and I think I've told this story in the tank before, Damon, and this is something that would totally be lost on you. But So working in the PR department, I was with the sideline reporter who was Armakatayan, and so I had to kind of follow him around and those were the rules. If the sideline reporter was on your side, there had to be a PR rep there. And so when Danny hits, before he comes out, he hits Tony Martin there and eclipses 60,000 yards passing, first guy ever to do it. And so just like we had to send Lindo's shoe into Canton, we needed that football. The problem was the next pass Katzenmoyer took, right? That was the pick six, and he took all the way into the tunnel. And you see they're going nuts, and the first thing anybody does, right, they hand it to the equipment guy. They're putting the tape on the ball, and, you know, that thing's going to his house. And I'm like, shit. And Harvey's like, get the ball. And so I got to go try and get this football. How in the world am I ever going to get that football? I think the only saving grace was that they did preserve it, right, that they did take. But then Damon comes in, and all this other stuff happens, and we had to remind Armin – that the last time Danny had missed a game, or the last time Danny left a game, was with the Achilles tear. And the first thing that Scott Mitchell did was what? A pick six.
Yep.
So, I mean, it really was, I don't even know if you knew that, but the same thing. Pick six in Cleveland, the sky's falling. Because the first thing that happens, right, for everybody, when a guy like Dan Marino goes down, is like, oh, shit. And then a pick six is double oh, shit. But Scott, hell, right, you guys rallied in that game against Cleveland Juice. It came back and won the game.
Yep.
And Damon, same thing. So it really was kind of remarkable. You talk about the storylines. There was so much swirling around there. But at halftime, I had to go over to the Patriots PR guy and say, hey, you know that football that Katzenmoyer is probably pretty fired up about? Kind of need it back. And I got it back, Damon. I got the damn ball back.
And that might have been only Katzenmoyer's pick six for a touchdown in his career. I mean, linebackers don't get many of those.
No. Well, you know, Zach had a few, but there's a reason why, you know, he's in talks to make it his way to Canton. But that was crazy. So a lot of great storylines in 99, as we just said. And you had this 4-1 run, you know, and anytime a guy like Dan Marino, well, there aren't that many, but anytime a franchise quarterback goes down, that's the big question. You know, how's your number two guy going to respond? And Damon and the team did respond. Your 4-1 run was fantastic. Dan recovers. That, you know, it's funny. All roads lead back to Seattle. You guys shut the Kingdome down, right? You know, they blow the place up the next day. You not only knock them out of the playoffs, they literally demolish the building the next day. And then things get a little dicey from there. In Jacksonville, the off season, and then there's a quarterback battle, right? And we've had Jay Fiedler in the tank and had an amazing conversation with him and his journey to the league and how crazy it was for him to get there. But talk about what that was like for you, because I know it was not an easy off season for either of you guys. I know it was not it was a hell of a battle, but I know things were, you know, things did not necessarily go the way you might have expected. Just talk about what that transitional year was like for you.
Yeah, that was tough, you know, because I think Jimmy was a pretty big fan of mine, kind of liked the way I worked and competitive. And then, as you know, he retired after that 99 season. Dave took over and hired Chan Gailey. And I think Dave just kind of left it in Chan's hands as to who was going to be the starting quarterback. And if you remember back then, Chan's, you know, the most success he had as a coordinator was with Slash, you know, in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Cordell Stewart. And so, you know, I think he really wanted a more mobile quarterback, and Jay was certainly more athletic than I was. And, you know, so that's really kind of the direction they went. I think the most frustrating thing for me is just, you know, coming off that awesome run in 99, you know, and really going through training camp. You know, Jay was hurt all training camp, came back, played the last game versus Saints and threw three interceptions. And so when I showed up for, you know, that Monday morning, I kind of thought I was going to be the starting quarterback.
Damn right.
Right.
So that was a little bit of a shocker from Dave, you know, but it was what it was. And, you know, again, it was more of a philosophy and I think a certain style and a system. And I just, in Chan's eyes, I wasn't that guy. And so, you know, and even after that year, going on the road at Indy in 2000, had a huge win beating Peyton Manning and the Colts when Jay got hurt and I came off the bench. And I guess that still wasn't good enough to keep me around as a backup, as they let me go and brought in Ray Lucas, another more athletic guy. So, again, I think it was more of a philosophy type thing. I'll chalk it up to that. But certainly Jay had an awesome run with the Dolphins and was a good player. And you guys won a bunch of games and all that. But, yeah, there's no doubt there's some shoulda, coulda, woulda, wisha, all that stuff. You know, had I been the guy there in 2000.
Yeah, well, I thought 2000 was pretty shitty for all of us, man. So, you know, you were a good soldier like you are, man, a classy guy that you are, man. But, you know, when the season ended, you had to move on, you know, as much as you may hate, you know, to bring this up. But, I mean, you signed with the Patriots prior to 2001 season. And so we spoke to Izzo, and he mentioned that your expectations were to go in there and be that experienced guy behind Drew Bledsoe. And as we all know, you know, now that, you know, they had another young quarterback come on the roster, right? And then that kid named Brady, right?
Oh, man. So
how soon did you realize, you know, that he might just be pretty good?
Well, you know, there's no doubt you get up there to New England. And if I was being honest with you, and I'd have told you that 20 years ago that I was sitting in the room with the greatest head football coach of all time and the greatest quarterback of all time, there's no way I could say I saw that coming.
Right.
But I'll say this. Tommy is the most psycho competitive dude. I thought I was a hard worker. And then this guy would take it to the next level. I mean, he was the guy that was going to be in there at 6 a.m. and the guy that let's do another set in the weight room. I mean, I thought I did all that stuff to the extreme to survive in this league. And he went the extra mile. And I also think that he was absolutely incredible at just connecting with the guys. You know, that's his secret sauce. And I think we see that today, to this day, all these years later, as his ability to connect and relate. And it just, You know, it's like the great coach you played for. You never wanted to let him down. And you just, you know, he's that dude. Like, and I can see all his teammates to this day. Like, I'm not going to let Brady down. I'm going to be where I'm supposed to be, when I'm supposed to be there. I'm going to get open. I'm going to catch this ball. He just brings that. The great ones bring that out. I mean, Danny brought that out in a scrub like me coming out of nowhere as a free agent. Like, the great ones do that, right? And so you could see some of that early on, like, you know, who he was hanging out with on the team and how he connected with guys. And like, he was just different like that. So but God, I do remember, this is a true story, I do remember going into Belichick's office after that training camp, and again getting bad news, much like Wonstadt gave me. but the news was, you know, Damon, you know, we're gonna put you as the three. You know, Brady at the two right now. I just feel like he has a little better feel of the offense than you right now. Things could change, but just be ready to roll. You know, and I always think, damn it, if Belichick would have got it right, you know, just think where he might be today.
Wow.
He might have won a few Super Bowls. I love it. That's too fun. Yeah. Izzo said it. He goes, you know, he was checking in, and because obviously there was the group of you guys there, which we know from that great picture that.
God, I knew you were going to bring that up.
Yeah, got to talk about the picture.
The picture where you guys showed off your Super Bowl rings at the end of the year that worked out pretty good. But yeah. Izzo said that, you know, after camp, hey, what's going on? How's it going? And you're like, oh man, this kid's a little bit better than maybe I expected.
Yeah, he, you know, but Tom just has that awesome, soft-spoken way about him that you see to this day. That just, you know, he kind of fool you that he might be the punter or the kicker. No. This dude, if he loses in backgammon or cards on the plane, like, you know, this table's getting flipped. Like, he just, okay. I mean, I could tell you stories of pickup basketball games against fire departments for charity that we were losing at halftime because we had a few beers before the game, and Tom getting in our ass like, dude, we're not losing to a bunch of middle-aged firefighters here tonight, guys.
I work for a guy like that too, Damon, so like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like the dude is so damn competitive. So, but that's what makes him great.
Yeah, man. You're damn right.
But could you see it at that point in time? I mean, he was, I guess, going into his second year. He was a 6th-round pick, was on the roster, but wasn't, like, could you see all of that even in those moments?
You would see like him getting so excited about a touchdown he threw in 7-on-7 on the second week of training camp, when you're like, can I just get some ice on my arm? Like he right. just loved to compete, right? Like, I mean, it just never ended. I saw that for sure.
Yeah. It's hard for us to talk about as Dolphin fans too, but I don't know, Juice. I felt this thing, and I'm seeing it on Twitter. Something about the fact that he went to Tampa and he did it here, like, everybody just kind of relaxed a little bit. And they're like,
yeah, it wasn't as bad as in New England.
It just
Absolutely.
Didn't feel the way it felt when it was the goddamn patient.
Yeah, with that pewter in red, it's not as bad.
It's a whole different deal. Right? It's a whole different deal. Well, Izzo told us another story. And I know that probably scares anybody when I say Izzo told us another story. But he said, following that 2001 season, or actually in the middle of that 2001 season, he said, ask Damon about the trip we took to Yankee Stadium for the ALCS. And Damon had a little run-in with a few of New York's finest.
Oh, my God. That's right. Yeah. So my home team, Seattle Mariners, I don't think they've been back since. They're absolutely the joke of Major League Baseball. But actually made it to the ALCS against the Yankees that year in 2001. And, yeah. It was, I think it was our bye week or something. And we got a limo. It was Bledsoe, myself, Brady, Katzenmoyer, and we got a limo. And we went down to Yankee Stadium to watch the Mariners play the Yankees. It was pretty badass because we got to go up and meet George Steinbrenner up in his suite, Yogi Berra. And I mean, that ride from Boston to New York is no joke. I mean, we're talking like 3 hours or whatever. So, yeah, a few pops were consumed on that thing. Some serious money was lost gambling. You can ask Izzo about that and how nice of a guy.
He told me about it.
How nice of a guy Drew Bledsoe is, too, at the end of the day, cutting things in half.
Said he dropped a zero. Let him drop a zero on the end of it.
Oh, man.
And Izzo still wanted to try and win it back, Juice.
Eventually,
it was going to come my way.
Oh, man. But anyways, as you can imagine, that time was a pretty sensitive time in our country. Yeah. You know, we're coming off of 9/11, too, and this baseball game is just a few months after all of that. So I think it was a matter, honest to goodness, of me bumping into a police officer that I didn't know was a security at the stadium. And literally, yeah, I was, I'd had a few pops in me, And no, I didn't talk back. My God, no. But he was pissed I bumped into him. And you can imagine some New York security right after 9/11. These guys,
for sure,
they're on edge, and rightfully so. So it was a matter of, don't you know? He's like, what are you doing? No. So, yeah, yeah. It was kind of a scary moment. The last thing I
wanted. Hell yeah.
Going into the jail in Yankee Stadium.
And did they identify you as Boston guys? Like, did that
figure it out? Honest to God, Brady was wearing a Yankee hat that night. Tom Brady wasn't Brady yet. Right. So he wasn't Tommy. He was Tom.
Right.
So I think he was a Yankee fan. So that was kind of part of the allure, too. And I was a Mariner fan. But, yeah, what an awesome trip that was. It was my first time at Yankee Stadium and seeing that whole thing. But a crazy time in our country, much like we find ourselves in today. But, yeah, Larry and I have had some good times. And, yeah, it was pretty cool. Like, obviously, we hated leaving Miami and the Dolphins. But that same year, you know, together going to a new team in the same place and having our friendship and relationship and to be able to adapt in a new city and all that stuff was pretty cool.
Man, that's awesome stuff, man. That run, man, pretty incredible, Damon, man. You guys had there, man, and be a part of that, man, and be almost immediate success when you got there, right?
You know, just kind of being there at the beginning of it all is, I think, what really makes it stand out all these years later. Yeah, for sure. You know, you didn't know. And that team in 01, just like that wasn't as good as our 99 Dolphin team. I mean, the stars really aligned in a lot of ways for that football team to win it all that year. I mean, the crazy story really starts in training camp. Our quarterback coach died, Dick Rabine. Brady, myself, Bledsoe, we get a knock on our door at 7 a.m. In the middle of training camp. Imagine this saying, hey, sorry to tell you guys, but Coach Rabine passed away last night.
Holy shit.
And it's just like, what? Wow. No. What? So that news breaks. And then, you know, so Charlie Weiss and Belichick kind of ended up they didn't hire a new quarterback coach. They both kind of took on the role. And, you know,
that was fun.
Yeah, it was fascinating. I mean, it was really interesting. You know, Belichick, we'd watch film for like 4 hours straight without a piss break. And I mean, I you know, we'd watch 50 snaps in a row of, you know, Charles Woodson, you know, here he is, you know, in cover three. And now look at him and when he rolls up and here's how he stops the run. And maybe I mean, it was psychotic, but it was awesome because you learned from a defensive guy and the way he looks at it. And Tom would tell you to this day that all that great stuff with Bill as a defensive guy and all that time he spent with him early on was huge in his development. So, but anyway, you know, all the things that had to happen that year, 9/11, you know, in Boston, those planes taken off and all of it there. Joe Andruzzi, our left guard, you know, his brothers were New York City firefighters and were there. Building. I mean, and then, you know, we won games we shouldn't have. Obviously, the tuck rule, you say what you want, but that was a fumble. Everyone would tell you it was a fumble, right? Yeah. I mean, and then Adam Vinatieri's kick, you know, and then to go to Pittsburgh where Tom gets hurt and to win that game where they hadn't lost at home in 2 years, whereas, you know, and then the Super Bowl were 13-point underdogs, the greatest underdog in Super Bowl history. So, like, everything just came together for the magic of that season. And, yes, certainly all these years later, and I hate on a Dolphin radio show. I'm sitting here talking about the Patriots. Good God, you asked me to be on the show.
Not as much as we hate it, Daniel.
And our listeners are going to hate, too. But it's okay.
I know they are. But my point is this. You
There'll
don't
be
have
some editing.
A star-studded superstar team to win a Super Bowl. And that team just scratched and clawed and lunch-pailed its way to winning that thing. So it was pretty cool all these years later to be a part of it. Sorry.
I bet it was. No, it's all good.
Don't be apologizing for that, man.
Great stories in there. Sure. And even, you know, look, if you're a fan of the sport, you got to get past the fact that there's this rivalry and to hear what the great ones do to be the great ones, you know, and to like to watch 50 straight snaps of a defensive right. back. I mean, that's fascinating to me to hear something,
you know,
like that.
The other really cool story about that season, this will relate to the Dolphins because, you know, and I've told this story a bunch over the years, is, you know, you asked me about Brady and what makes him special and certainly his way to connect, but it's also his positive mindset, right? We hear so much of that in today's sports. And I think, you know, when we were coached, it was so much of it was, here's how not to do it. And God darn it, what the hell are you doing? You know, today it's a lot different. But I think Brady always just had this positive mindset. And Danny was that way in a lot of ways too, where it's like, you know, if he threw a couple interceptions that day, they were never his fault, right?
Right.
Like he just had that mindset. But I can remember after that game in 2001 down in Miami where the Dolphins kicked our ass and I'm in New England my first year there. I think the score was maybe like, 20-7 or 24-10 or something like that. And we're on that plane. Brady was very pedestrian. We're on that plane ride home. And Tom's like, looks at me and we're playing cards. He's like, after this is his second career start. And he's like, you know what, Damon? This is the same damn game I've been playing my whole life. Yeah, I know we lost a day, but this is the same freaking game of football. I'm going to be a great one. And I'm like, okay, Tom, deal me some more cards. No.
All right, kiddo.
30-10 was the final on that one. I figure we'd take as much stuff as glory.
Again, to my point, this is his mindset. Fast forward, getting ready for that Pittsburgh Steelers AFC Championship game where they hadn't lost at home. I think they were 15-1. And we're watching film that week, and he's like, stops the clicker, and he's like, Damon, dude, this nickel sucks. They are never going to be able to cover Troy Brown in the slot. Dude, we're going to dice these guys. Dude, we're going to kick their ass. I'm like, okay, Tom, do you know, like, these Pittsburgh Steelers, like, they, yeah, okay. Well, we go up there, we win. Fast forward 2 weeks later, it's Super Bowl Sunday. Like I said, we were 13-point underdogs going into that game. And we're sitting in our locker, pregame meal. And in pregame, hour, half hour before kickoff, he nudges me. He's like, Damon, do you have any idea what it's going to feel like to be world champs in 3 hours?
How about that shit?
And at that point, I'm a believer, man. Yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah, do it, Tommy.
This guy was in his third year in the league, right? And it just first time starter.
Second year in the league.
Wow.
And so, you know what? You get to the mindset of these great, great cues. And it's just like, he made a decision a long time ago, like, I'm going to be the greatest to ever play this game. And he sacrifices everything 20 years later to do that. His avocado ice cream, his deep tissue pliability, like it's all for his craft. And he is psychotic about it. And that's why he's Tom Brady. But, you know, we could go back to my time with Danny too. And why was he a great one? Because he believed in himself. He believed he was the very best. Just the way he'd walk into that huddle. I swear to God, I want to walk like him, you know? I mean, those are the great ones. And I was just, you know, people call me Forrest Gump because I can tell these stories. And I was around the greatest I got to play with two of the greatest quarterbacks to ever do it on earth.
Yeah, you think about it. The greatest winner and probably the greatest pure passer to ever.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I'm not pull up. No one can throw a football the way Dan does. I mean, like, try to show him. Look at that, Danny. Like, ball's gone. It's out. It's gone. Like, the quickest, baddest release. You know, all these. I was a huge overstrider, right? And then Marino, like, wouldn't even take a step. Just all hips, right? Like, and to this today, they teach that. Don't take a big step. Danny was so far ahead of his time. But me, I was so blessed to be around both these guys and, you know, all the life lessons, the competitive lessons, and to just be around greatness. It was freaking awesome.
Well, this interview has been freaking awesome. Yeah, and I appreciate you spending the time with us, Damon. I know you got wine to sell. You got quarterbacks to raise. You got a lot of things going on. But I'm glad you brought it back to Danny, because I'd always wanted to ask you this, because I had heard this rumor, and I don't know how true it is, although I could piece it together. And I don't know the time. Maybe it was that 99 season when you had to take over for Dan when he was out for those five games. But you were driving. You were not the guy who got to the NFL and had to go get the big fancy car and whatever. You were driving like a Celica or a Camry or something. And the rumor is Danny said, hey, you know, here's the big piece of advice he gave you. Hey, bro, you can't be the starting quarterback of Miami Dolphins and shoulder working that shit. Is there any truth to that?
I drove that Toyota Camry. Yeah. And my wife had one too. We were that
cool. I love it.
We had
love
two Camrys. But you know, I was making $130,000 a year. I thought I was the richest guy on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, that was our base salary. And I didn't know how long I was going to be at this thing. That's why I stayed at Palm Trace Landings. Hell, when I did sign my second contract with the Dolphins, I bought a nice house in Hawks Landing. And then shit, 3 months later, I get fired.
Gone.
So, you know. Yeah. I think I was pretty smart not to buy the Escalade right away, you know, saved a little bit of money. But Danny's right. You know, I have a Camry, but I didn't know better.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great story. That is outstanding.
Man, this is too much fun. And these are, you know, we've had Larry Zonka on the show. We've had, you know, Mercury Morris. We've had, you know, some guys who have played more recently, but for Juice and I, and I know for Pre-Shoot, you know, the guys who were, we worked with, the guys who we were there. Now, I wasn't in a huddle with you like Juice was, but to be able to be there for the press conferences, to be, you know, to be in the players lounge when these things happen, these stories, these are really special. It's great to see you, man. And I really appreciate you coming onto the show today.
Yeah, no, it's fun to be here. And you know, you brought up some of those old names. I'll leave you with one last story. Cause this one's so good. It's, I got to tell you, I was thinking about, and you asked me, come up with some old stories. Well, speaking of the old timers, right? Larry Zonka, Manny Fernandez, right? We all remember Manny. I mean, he was the man, was a Super Bowl. Gosh, I can't remember. 72 season was Super Bowl maybe five?
Seven. Five or six.
Super Bowl seven.
Okay, Super Bowl seven. My bad. But anyway, he had like, what, 15 tackles. I mean, he was the man, right? Manny Fernandez.
Like 18 or something.
Over the years down there, I got connected with him through fishing and hunting. And believe me, I didn't really grow up doing that, but I did take a liking to the fishing and would do that with some of the guys, and we'd go down to the Keys and like some of these stories. But Manny invited me on a hunting trip one time, and it was actually filmed for TV.
Oh, wow.
And we were going somewhere up north, I can't remember, somewhere by Lake Okeechobee. And, you know, I was kind of excited. I'd never gone hunting. And we were going to go shoot some turkey called the Osceola turkey. And this is like this famous, incredible, beautiful turkey. And again, we have TV crews and all this, that we go up there, and I bought all this really cool, like, camouflage that I'd never seen before for like the swampland.
Oh, you were all geared up, Damon.
Geared
I love up. It.
I was all geared up. I was all hyped up and super excited to go shoot the Osceola turkey. Right. So we go out there, and I'm not lying. I see these birds and within these things and, ooh, making all these noises, trying to get these birds to come, smart turkeys to come close to us so we could jump out of the blind and shoot them with a shotgun, right? And, you know, all day long, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours go by. And these birds are just way too smart. They don't come in. And finally, I'm just sweating my ass off cameras. I'm like, I just want to shoot this damn turkey. I'm probably never going to hunt again in my life. Can I kill a bird? And they're like, yeah, it's getting a little dark. You know, we probably got to kill one and set this thing up for TV. So literally from like 300 yards, you know, you get out the 22 rifle or whatever. This is not how you kill these birds. You have to call them in and shoot them with a shotgun. So from 200, 300 yards away, we line up this gun, and this guy kind of helps me shoot it and kill it. And I'm like, hey, and they're like, no, this isn't cool. But we got to do this right. We got to set it up for TV. So anyway, we take the bird that I shot from 300 yards away with the wrong gun, you know, get it out in front of us, me and Manny in the blind, and then they're coming, and we jump out and shotguns, and then, of course, they don't show the kill on TV. They couldn't do it back then. So we walk up, and oh, yeah, we got the bird. I just wanted to be honest with everybody in Miami.
This is the moment. This is the moment.
I killed the damn turkey if someone ever saw that thing the right way. But it was too hot. It was too long a day. And I'll be damned if I wasn't going to kill an Osceola turkey that day. So that's my hunting story with Manny Fernandez.
Just I feel like they do that in fishing shows all the time, too. I don't know.
Like the cooking show where they show you mixing it up and then all of a sudden you pull it out. Well, how the hell did you get that done?
That's quick. It's a fast oven. Yeah.
You know what? I appreciate the candor, Damon. The tank is a place where people come clean, man. So I appreciate you diving in and sharing that with us.
There you go.
What a great way to end this one, man, Damon. Thanks for diving in, bro. Thanks for diving in.
I appreciate you guys. Anytime. Great catching up.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, Dolph fans, number one, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank, go get your aqua orange, yeah it's time to dive up in that fish tank, it's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank, rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude, okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school,
mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tails in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stars we never heard to the public. Bet we love it. Dolphins fans never budging. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. You looking at that fish tank? It's time to dive in. Fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank. Dog fans with attitude, we about to dive up in that fish tank.